Good afternoon, and thank you all for being here. At this time, I will call to order the regular meeting for CDOT Executive Committee for Monday, January 27, 2014. First item on the agenda is call for order and the roll call.
Blythe, Cathedral City,
here.
Coachella,
present.
Desert Hot Springs,
here.
Indian Wells,
present.
Indio,
the mayor's here, he just stepped out for a minute.
La Quinta?
Here.
Palm Desert?
Here.
Palm Springs?
Here.
Rancho Mirage?
Here.
Riverside County 3rd District?
Here.
Riverside County 4th District?
He's
he stepped out. Riverside County 5th District?
Here.
Agua Caliente? We have a quorum.
All right. Thank you. And at this time, we'll like to welcome a new member to CVAC, Adam. Thank you for being here, and welcome to CVAC, being part of our committees.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Second item, and we did a little bit a month ago, and that is to recognize one of our long-term members of CVAC, the former mayor of Desert Hot Springs, Yvonne. Please come on up here.
All the way up?
All the way up. Come on up. Here she comes. Well, you know, it's been an honor to working with Yvonne for many years, and that we're sorry to see you go, but you know, you can move forward, and go on from there, and that's
saying the one door closed, and
another one open. Yeah, well, hopefully we'll find another door, right?
I'm waiting.
Anyways. We have this for you, and I'm not going to read all the whereases and that, but it's in recognition to all of the work that you've done with CVAC and that over the years and that, and we want to thank you very much and wish you the very best in the future.
Thank you so much, Donna. I want to thank everyone here that I've worked with over the past, 6 years that I've been on this committee, and it's been a wonderful journey. And I think that we have got a lot accomplished. We've completed 2 overpasses that are very good for the West Valley. Actually, 3 with Bob Hope.
And then
Dake Palm should be finished anytime. So, you know, we really, really have done. And I'm looking forward to what you're doing for the future. And I'll be keeping an eye out.
I'm sure you will. Thank you. Would you please fill out a request to speak form? It's the form in the back of the room, and give it to our clerk over here. At this time, anybody wishing to speak on an item not on the agenda may do so by coming up to the podium. I have no request to speak. If there's anybody wishing to speak, please come up. Give us your name and address for the record, please.
My home address, my PO box, or my...
Whatever, however we can contact you.
Okay. My name is Linda Starr, and my P.O. Box is 2864 Rancho Mirage 92270. The reason why I'm here today is I have an idea that I think would be wonderful for the Coachella Valley. Since I've lived here for 25 years, I've noticed a lot of changes, a lot of wonderful changes, but I believe that the numbering of the buildings are done very poorly, that you can not only not find something sometimes during the daylight, but you can't find it at night. So I'm wanting to know if the different cities that are represented here now would be interested in putting our heads together to come up with a better numbering system on the buildings that they somewhat illuminate at night, so the locals can find their way and our tourists can find their way. It's confusing.
Can be.
And I think that we could set a whole new thing that other places would copy us. Because we got it together, we're making it easy and convenient for the people that live here and the people that visit here and the people that invest here. It could be a really wonderful thing. So that's what my idea is.
Okay.
Thank you
for that, and we'll have staff look into that.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bob Manning?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Manning, and I'm here to speak about passenger rail. I represent CVAG and passenger rail issues, and we're here to talk about a major meeting that will be taking place on April 2nd and 3rd. I passed out some literature to most of the members. These are interesting times for passenger rail development in California. With the formation of the new California State Transportation Agency, California is on the verge of significant enhancements to passenger rail system. The modernization and integration of passenger rail services that is being led by CALSTA and the Federal Railroad Administration working with transportation agencies throughout the state are creating an environment of investment in passenger rail infrastructure that has been unparalleled in recent years and will continue to grow. The 2014 California Passenger Rail Summit Planning Committee includes Los Angeles County Metropolitan Transportation Authority, Orange County Transportation Authority, Riverside County Transportation Commission, San Diego Association of Governments, Southwest Rail Passenger Association, and the Los Angeles, San Diego, San Luis Obispo, Lausanne Rail Corridor Agency. Join us as we meet with leaders in the industry for 2 days of discussion regarding the modernization and integration of passenger rail service in California. Speakers will discuss funding, development, and strategic approaches to the growth of passenger rail in the state. Joining us at this event will be state and federal representatives, passenger rail agencies, and other leaders working together to shape the future of passenger rail. Along with this, we have a funding another little something I would like to read that leads into who we are and what we're doing. And the California Passenger Rail Summit will bring together these rail policymaker agencies, consultants, and advocates to work to solve the many complicated and tangled rail issues in our state. This will be our call to action to develop an efficient and effective passenger rail network within California and beyond to meet the future travel demands. The two-day conference is scheduled for Wednesday, Thursday, April 2nd and 3rd, 2014, at the Los Angeles County Metropolitan Transportation Authority headquarters adjacent to Los Angeles Union Station. We ask for your financial support in order to make this a successful event for rail professionals at all levels. The 2014 California Passenger Rail Summit Local Host Planning Committee includes the Los Angeles County Metropolitan Transportation Authority, Orange County Transportation Authority, Riverside County Transportation Commission, San Diego Association of Governments, Southwest Rail Passenger Association, and the Los Angeles, San Diego, San Luis Obispo, Lausanne Rail Corridor Agency. While staff time has been provided in kind by these organizations, it will not be sufficient to make the summit a success. Your contributions will be key. The reason I'm talking about this is because this is a major development that will certainly impact what we're doing right here. And I must say that we're still forming the agenda, which is just about complete, and we have the website ready to go probably by next week. Again, this is something I think that you should all be clearly aware of. Any comments or any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Comments? See none. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll move on to our executive committee director comments on that. Any directors have any comments, anything need to be said? Seeing none, Tom?
Just a couple of quick updates. One, to acknowledge a couple of important transportation projects that will be moving forward. One, of course, is the Airport Boulevard grade separation project, an important safety project. Supervisor Benoit led a groundbreaking ceremony, was it last week? That's a $29 million project and one very important to the health and well-being of folks in Thermal and well beyond. Secondly, acknowledge Mayor Harnick and John and the City of Palm Desert for their work and progress on Monterey Interchange. My understanding is you did award that contract last week. It's a, $7 to $8 million project.
$7,642,632.
For some reason, I knew Mr. Wolmuth would know the exact amount. But we are all looking forward to that. It'll certainly improve the operation of that relatively new interchange, but one that certainly has some challenges, particularly this time of year. And lastly, I do want to acknowledge a grant that we received from the MSRC, Greg Pettis. We received $250,000 from them, the South Coast Air Quality Management District, for our very successful street sweeping program. It's a regional street sweeping program that reduces the overall cost to our member agencies and helps us fulfill our state implementation plan and air quality goals related to PM10. So another $250,000 helps defray the cost to all of you and to CVAG, so that's good news as well. That's the extent of my report at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Tom. We'll move on now to the consent calendar. Anybody have any questions, comments?
Mr. Chairman, I will be voting no, consistent with my Transportation Commission representative, Mr. Pettis, on item number C.
Okay. With that, I'll entertain a motion for the consent calendar.
Approval. Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Okay. No?
No, on C.
Okay.
C only.
Okay.
Thank you.
As required by our new law, I'm going to say that the motion was carried unanimously with the exception of one no vote on number C.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay. We'll move on to our business items, and that is the first one that is A, and it's a presentation by Steve Van Stockham, a Riverside County Department of Environmental Health Director, and Matthew Geller, Social Mobile Food Vendors Association Chief Executive Officer, regarding Riverside County Ordinance Number 580 pertaining to a mobile food facility. At this time, I'm going to ask John Benoit if he might make a comment on this.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity. I asked for this item to be put on the agenda and to bring this presentation to the Coachella Valley. I understand there was a similar presentation and it was very well received on the western side of the county, so I thought we needed to try and make that happen out here. Basically, as most of you are aware, Riverside County for years has not allowed mobile food kitchens. This is different than a food truck. The ones I used to buy on Graveyard Shift, where you bought a pre-made burrito, those have always been legal in Riverside County. There have been a number of them operating, but we did not allow the kitchen on wheels that actually prepared from scratch a meal because of health concerns about how you regulate health in that environment. There have been advances in the field. There have been opportunities in other counties that where these types of facilities have proven themselves to be safe. And we had Kevin Jeffries, as a new member of the board, bring to us the idea that we ought to relook at this whole issue. And we took a long time, and we did it. And we believe we've come up with an ordinance that will guarantee the safety of the foods being produced by this type of a moving kitchen. That having been said, there are now new opportunities and new business opportunities in the Valley for this type of operator who wants to come and service they perceive to be demand for that type of service in the Valley. But we also have concerns that were raised by a number of folks in various cities about when and where these would operate. We are here today because the county, in moving this ordinance forward, doubled the normal period of time between adoption and implementation, specifically to allow all of you time to take a look at your ordinances in light of this change and make any changes or corrections or additions that you believe might be necessary or appropriate for your city during that period of time. The county is going to be taking the same look at our use of those in other areas, and I know the wine country was a specific concern of what's appropriate in the wine country. And there are folks in the wine country that want to be able to bring these trucks into their facility and use them, and they'll be now licensed to do that. There are others that don't want them sitting just outside on the street taking away their business. So all of those considerations are going on at the county. I wanted to make sure that you were fully aware that you want to have the opportunity to have those kinds of discussions and that what exactly the county action meant for your city. So I'm pleased that we have a number of people here from the county who can answer questions. I believe Jeff Green, the chief of staff supervisor Kevin Jeffrey's office that poses us here, have questions. But most importantly, we have Matthew Geller from the Southern California Mobile Food Vendors Association, who's been very effective in helping us understand and move this process forward from the very beginning. So with that, I turn it over to Steve Van Stocken from our health department to kick off this brief presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor. Yes, my name is Steve Van Stocken. I'm director for Riverside County Environmental Health. We've been working on this ordinance with industry and with cities and everything to basically try to craft what we think is a model ordinance that we think a lot of the other counties will probably copy at this point. I want to introduce Keith Jones, my deputy director, and he is going to do the presentation on this. He oversees the program and the staff that will be doing all the inspections and everything, and he's put together a short PowerPoint presentation, and I'll turn it over to Keith.
Thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for keying up the PowerPoint. This is just a brief six-slide presentation, very similar to the presentation that we gave to our Board of Supervisors back in December. I was out here about a year ago talking to all of your planning board members about the upcoming cottage food laws, and that was very well received. And over this past year, we've permitted and registered over 100 small businesses under those laws. I look forward to working with all of your cities on the new ordinance for food trucks in Riverside County. So basically, just to get going here, regarding food safety, that's what my talk is going to be about. And then following myself, we're going to have Matt Geller, who's going to talk about the industry side of things. And hopefully between the two of us, we can answer all of your questions this evening. So regarding food safety, Environmental Health is the local enforcement agency for the unincorporated areas, as you know, and all of the incorporated cities within Riverside County. Just like we inspect all of your restaurants, we'll be inspecting the food trucks as well. Therefore, our standards impact the entire county. Our Board of Supervisors has attempted to balance public health and safety along with being as business-friendly as we can. So there's a lot of issues involving the food trucks and the mobile food facilities. Okay. I'm not sure if we have an IT person here, but I'll try to hit the wrong button. Is there another one to get on set? Thank you.
The 12-year-old kids.
I think we got it. Okay. So basically, a little bit of background in Riverside County. Originally, this is not a new ordinance, but it's a revised and improved ordinance. Riverside County Ordinance 580 was adopted back in 1980, as the chairman mentioned. You know, there were concerns back then about safety. And basically, the ordinance had limited mobile food facilities to only prepackaged and limited food preparation at events. The community events required preliminary reviews and approval from multiple agencies, such as planning, fire, law, and environmental health. We have basically regulated food trucks the same as food booths under the temporary food facility standards in the past. So, what changes have we approved to the ordinance? And as you heard, the ordinance will be implemented on April 8th, even though it was passed by our board back in December. The time was given to allow everybody to kind of prepare for the permitting and operation of the food trucks in the county beyond the events. So the board approved the changes on December 10th. All mobile food facilities will be allowed to operate on a daily basis throughout the county. We will require construction plan reviews and inspections to ensure that equipment and operations meet the current standards. Use of local commissary will be encouraged, But as you can imagine, there are not a lot of commissaries here in the county, so we hope that situation will change. Once the food trucks come, commissaries will be built to accommodate them. Right now, we're going to have to evaluate what's reasonable. If someone wants to come into our county using a neighboring commissary from a neighboring county, then those will be approved, and we'll be in communication with our counterparts in the neighboring counties. So we will make reasonable options to... we'll consider reasonable options for the commissaries. We will be inspecting, grading, and posting our grades similar to restaurants, and there will be a one-year phase-in period before all food trucks must meet the mobile food facility standards at the community events, which we've inspected as temporary food booths in the past. Okay, and here come the food trucks. Basically, our preparations have been, we've met with Supervisor Jeffrey's office and coordinated several meetings with Matt Geller of the Southern California Mobile Food Vendors Association. We participated in an informational meeting where all the cities were invited to attend, is my understanding. We have consulted with our surrounding counties and even arranged for a staff tour of the California cart builders in Lake Elsinore, where they build the new modern food carts, one of many places that do that. Right here in our county. New guidelines will be a step-by-step manual for starting a mobile food facility business, and those guidelines are close to being completed by our department, and they'll be posted on our website. As our director mentioned, the state law has been around. The state law for mobile food facilities and food trucks has been in place for many years, and that's why virtually every other jurisdiction around us has allowed the daily operation of food trucks. Fortunately for us, though, we don't have to grandfather the older problem trucks, because the California State Food Code says that when the improvements are made in the code, if a food truck was previously in compliance, then the new standards don't apply to them. Well, they weren't in compliance here because we never permitted them here. So we're going to have the luxury of only allowing the food trucks that meet the current codes in Riverside County. Not the older problem trucks that have the main problems with all the refrigeration and hot water and other issues. Finally, this gets down a little bit to a segue to Mr. Geller's talk, that there are laws in place that talk about how local jurisdictions can attempt to limit and restrict and determine the time, place, and manner of sales for mobile food vending. That goes beyond the environmental health law and the health and safety code. Once again, we're going to be plan checking these trucks. We're going to be getting information from these operators on what kind of food they want to sell, how they want to do it, making sure they have their certification for food safety, and then we're going to give them their annual permit. And then I assume they're going to be paying your cities a visit to get whatever business license they might need and learn a little bit more about any other restrictions that you might have. So with that, I'd like to possibly turn it over to Mr. Geller, and then, like I said, we'll both be able to answer questions on our related expertise, if that's agreeable.
Yep.
Thank you.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I love these talks. I have a very long PowerPoint that I'm going to move through very fast. I think the most effective use of time in these situations is really answering questions. This is a PowerPoint really about the emergence of the food truck industry. I think one of the things that I run into is, the question starts with, why do people like food trucks so much? What is it about food trucks and this new food truck movement that has really kind of captured the imagination of the consumer and kind of really created television shows and this crazy popularity? I think one of the first things that I can tell you is that food trucks are creating new cuisines, they're reaching out to customers, and they're turning just regular sidewalks into organic public space. What they've done is they've really turned parts of the city that nobody was using into spots where people want to hang out. And people also, when they're sitting in a food truck line, they seem to interact with each other. And, you know, we do a lot of, you know, surveys and things of that nature. But what we seem to see is people talk about their French fries, or they talk about, they scream line to line, hey, what are you getting over there? And, oh, it's this new type of hamburger. So it's really created not just a food movement, but a social movement. So far what we've seen is gourmet food trucks have been a boon to cities. We do our best to help with any city. We have 88 cities in Los Angeles County alone, and I've met with many of them to try to help them with their regulatory issues. I'm just going to give you some quick numbers here. You know, food trucks are the fastest growing segment of the food service industry currently. I think in 2011 it was a $600 million industry. By 2017 it's going to be about $2.6 billion. So it's a very fast growing industry that's seen a lot of popularity. That's kind of the breakdown of where it's, you know, the amount of quote unquote gourmet food trucks, which is more of the newer version. You know, we here in Southern California are really the birthplace of this new movement. We're kind of the envy of the rest of the country. I travel all over the country speaking to similar groups, and really Los Angeles and the surrounding communities have been kind of where it's grown. The typical vendor is the sole proprietor. There aren't a lot of franchised trucks. In-N-Out has a truck, McDonald's has a truck, Jack in the Box has a truck, but they're really used for more special oriented types of things. Food trucks are creating entrepreneurs. They're creating small businesses. They're employing people. One truck uses about 7 employees. And what we see in Los Angeles County is a lot of these trucks are turning into brick and mortars. I mean, it's neat to see. We have one truck, Pool House, that started in 2009. They have two ice cream shops. They're in Whole Foods around the country. They have carts and food trucks in 10 different cities. You can even catch them in Central Park. Like I said, this is Love Park in Philadelphia. They activate public space. We've seen quite a few instances in Los Angeles, and actually Long Beach, where it was an area that wasn't frequented, and they turned it into a walking area. And I think Renata Hills is our most popular ongoing event. It went from a very sleepy street. Friday nights, they started having food trucks. It's been 3.5 years, and it had been at 40% vacancies. Now there's zero vacancies for shops there. And the merchants, the food trucks, and the Chamber of Commerce all got together and made it a very successful event. It's about 30, anywhere from 20 to 50 trucks, depending on the season, every Friday night. This event is just kind of just talking about it being the best, Forbes magazine called it the best small business opportunity in America in 2011. I'm trying to get through this, we're going to have a lot of questions, but the job creation is definitely something that's one of the best parts of it. So the regulatory framework. People ask, you know, what are you allowed to regulate? Well, currently, California has a vehicle code 22455 that says that you may regulate food trucks the time, place, and manner as it pertains to public safety. You know, what we've seen in a lot of areas that have been really nervous about having food trucks has been, and if they have streets available, but they make off-site, off-street parking available, make it easy for private pieces of property to be activated for food truck lots or events, you see a lot less trucks on the street. Trucks have to do around 30 to 40 tickets per hour. So, and, you know, a lot of people are concerned, you know, well, they're going to go, I mean, the winery is a good example. Parking outside of a winery, at least when I go to wineries, it's not going to generate enough income for them, especially in an area that's far out. They need to be doing 30, 40 tickets an hour. So they really try to find areas that are have, you know, condensed people, big buildings, things of that nature, places where people are working. Events that are coordinated are really what they're looking for, and buildings that are in need of food. Typically places with less access to retail space or food retail. This is something our attorney put in. The gourmet trucks are not deviants. Sometimes there's a little bit of backlash. People are nervous that, you know, they're not safe, they're not hip. Well, he always likes to add the Pelosi in there. So The best regulations that work are the ones that deal with public safety. Where they can park, make sure they're not parking spaces, or not make sure they're not interfering with traffic, make sure they're not too close to schools because you don't want to have things like attractive nuisance. Trash is very important, things of that nature. And also you want to make sure that congestion is a serious concern. You don't want them so packed into one area that it's going to cause problems for parking, for sight lines, and just general movement of traffic. And with that, I just want to leave a lot of time for questions, and I'm sure you may have questions for the health department as well.
Thank you. You're completed?
I am.
Okay. And questions of the applicants? Let me start it off, and then I have a couple of questions. And that, of course, is on sales tax and that. How do we control something like this?
Well, it's a good question. It's called so with mobile vendors, their tax is collected through the county. And I'm telling you how it's done in Los Angeles County, and my understanding is it's most counties are doing it this way. The taxes are given to the county, and the county redistributes it as per a percentage of food establishments. So, for example, if Santa Monica had 18% of the food establishments in Los Angeles County, all of the money collected by food trucks or mobile vendors would then be divvied up, and 17% would go to Santa Monica.
Now, here in the Valley, nine cities, and these trucks, I don't know how many trucks you proposed to have out there and that, but are you going to separate and give every city an equal proportion of the sales tax?
The county is the one that's going to be collecting.
The county would.
So the county is the one that is going to have to...
That's a good question that I had not anticipated. Does anybody from the county staff have any idea if we anticipated that issue? You're saying in Los Angeles County they do it on a percentage basis of the fixed restaurants.
Of the fixed restaurants. Yeah. So they're basically, if Santa Monica has 15% of the fixed restaurants, they get 15% of the total take from
Mr.
Vendors.
Chairman, I will check back with our assessor and our folks in the county, and I will ask you to convey back an answer on how they would anticipate doing that. If they considered it, not willing to have options.
And I will also send information about the 80-80 rule. The state franchise tax board has just put out new mobile vending regulations, or new mobile vending tax rules, try to make it a little bit easier for them.
Okay, we'll cover the tax issue with them.
The second thing was, what effect are we going to have on our local businesses? You bring a portable business in sitting there close by to our businesses that are fixed in that area, and are you going to take away the business from our businesses already, and what effect's that going to have on us?
Well, I can only tell you what we've seen in Los Angeles and other cities.
Los Angeles is not the same as the Coachella Valley.
Right, no, of course. But
we don't want to look like Los Angeles.
Los Angeles County has 88 cities, so there are a lot of smaller cities that have operated. Typically, you don't see a lot of food trucks. Typically can't compete with restaurants, or they haven't been very successful competing with restaurants. What I mean by that is you're an office worker in an area where there are no restaurants, and we have some of these places in Los Angeles. A food truck is a great option. But in an area where you're going to have to sit on the sidewalk, you're going to have to, no place to use the restroom, no shelter, food trucks haven't fared as well against food trucks. Now, my thought is with food trucks here, they're going to be homegrown, so they're not just going to be businesses coming from outside the area. It's not going to be 100 miles to drive for a food truck at 50 cents a mile, paying all their employees to get here. It's probably not going to be a very good business decision for food trucks outside of this area. But I think you are probably going to have some trucks here that are going to do their best to earn business from customers.
There'd be some questions to that.
Mr. Chairman, sales tax, as a small business owner, when I fill out my monthly State Board of Equalization, I have to show what county the money goes to. Maybe the county would put something together where it would show what city the services were provided in. Maybe that's something that would help the county decide how much goes to each jurisdiction.
we'll consider that along with everything else we've said. We'll get back to you.
Okay. Richard?
Has the your group established any kind of criteria for the number of trucks in a certain area or how much open space you need for one truck?
We have, not for the cities, more for event forums. I mean, I think an area out here, unless you have a lot of very condensed workplaces, is not going to be conducive to just your standard lunch type of service. I mean, really out here, I think what people would be doing is fundraisers, events, things of that nature. But I think you're talking about one truck in one area.
Right.
I mean, what's gone on in Los Angeles and the surrounding communities is the market has really determined how many trucks end up in one particular area. So the county, the city, none of the cities limit the amount of permits. But with that, there has not been a huge jump in permits over the past 4 years. It stayed steady.
John,
do you have model ordinances at the association?
Yes.
That could be shared on request from other cities and counties?
Yes, and I think I've shared some with his office, Jeffrey's office, and I will continue. I mean, I'll share it with whoever would like them.
Well, if we have them, Mr. Green, then maybe you could make them available to my office.
Yes, your office has it as well.
Okay, we'll get those model ordinances for whatever use you want to make of them done to each of the cities here as a follow-up.
And I think, you know, one thing I want to add, you know, I've been doing an event, and I call it an event, but it's really just a Tuesday night in Santa Monica. And we were approached by a museum, the California Heritage Museum. And it was during the time that Santa Monica was deciding what they were going to do with food trucks on private pieces of property. And they worked with us, and we got an event. And over the course of 3 years, that museum event, and it's a very small museum, we do about 8 to 10 food trucks. It's on a Tuesday night. And we've raised $176,000 for that museum. And those are the best types of events for these food trucks, where it's controlled, it's off-street, they're invited. And there's a community involvement in the process. And those are the things that food trucks can really look for. You'll see in these types of, in smaller areas, they really do their best to try to immerse themselves in the community, especially the schools, churches, and museums.
I know, just looking at our city manager, when they come in for a license, we will have some heavy discussions as to where they're going to be located, and it's in a safe area, and I just don't want it to take away from our local businesses as to where it is. So the location of where they put these things will be very important, I know, in our city. Ty, you have some comments?
Sorry. I hadn't planned to talk. I sent everybody, I think, from the city councils around the valley a write-up that I had given the guy in hot food trucks. I am not speaking, and I will say this with the Ted here, I am not speaking for the city of Indian Wells. I'm speaking about food trucks and the problems and the concerns that I have for every city in this valley. I had over 300 trucks in the Los Angeles area. I know this business back and forth. I know what the problems are, and I've seen what can happen. Your question's a good question. Your concern's a major concern. It isn't the problem of them going to an event off-street. That's not where you're going to have your problem. You're going to have your problem, and I will tell you, they're not coming just to events. They're going to come down here. They're going to want to park on your streets. They're going to want to park in front of restaurants. And I'll give you one classic example. Jerry Snyder, who used to own the river, is in the business of 5757 Wilshire. He owns the office building there. There are 7 restaurants in that office building complex. The truck industry, when Vera Rugosa decided to lift and waive the restriction on trucks, was that they had to park a certain amount of feet from a restaurant or any food facility. He lifted that. So in the case of Jerry Snyder, to protect his operators, I happen to have had a restaurant in that facility, We lost over 20% of our business. And he had to go. It got so bad. There were as many as 10 to 15 trucks parked across the street from 5757 Ocean. He had to spend, and still is, spending $20,000 a month hiring rent-a-wreck cars that he parks across the street to prevent these trucks from parking near his facility. What they've done is they've moved down the street in front of the museum, still on the street. What does it do to the restaurant industry or anybody in the food service? It will knock 20 to 25% of your volume right out the door. It will be gone, and it's proven to be gone. And I can give you list after list. San Francisco has done the same thing. They lifted the restriction, and they've got restaurant operators in San Francisco suffering badly. They don't pay rent. They don't pay the licenses we pay. They don't pay all of the water and the utilities and things we pay. So all I can say to you, for instance, in Coachella or in Desert Hot Springs, if you allow those trucks to park in the streets at night, you're going to have crime. If you allow them to park in Palm Desert, on El Paseo, where you let them park downtown, the main Palm Canyon and Palm Springs, you're going to have major, major problems. You're going to have problems with your retailers. I just don't think this was well thought out. I tried to get them to consider it and look at it more. They didn't. The trucks are required in L.A. to park in commissaries. They're required to be cleaned there. They're required to be inspected there. In most instances, they're required to buy part of their food there. We don't have any commissaries in the Valley or in Riverside. So these trucks are going to come from Orange County. They're going to come from L.A. And all I can say to you is you look at it for your city. You need to put very serious restrictions in that prohibit them from parking anywhere near food operators. And that includes grocery stores. And that's all I can say to you. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. But this is a business I know well. And I would be very, very concerned about what you allow in your city and don't allow. I don't think events is an issue. The issue is, are you going to allow them to park on the streets and hurt the people that pay the taxes, pay the rent? That's the big question for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat. Anyone else? Chris?
Thank you. Before we just heard from the gentleman who spoke, it seems like there's a major zoning issue here, and I certainly appreciate the heads up from John, because speaking from Palm Springs standpoint, I'd rather know this is coming and we can get ahead of it, and I would advise all the other cities, as this gentleman spoke, said, to get ahead of it. So when that first business license does come to the door, you know how to deal with it. But I can assure you, Mr. Reddy has already got notes down here, and we will be dealing with it. Because it really, and again, from a special event issue, it's worked very, very well in our city, and I'm sure in other places. But it does need to be handled from its own standpoint. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Hey, what else?
Can you respond to a couple of ideas, a couple of answers I'd like to make on some of the issues?
And yeah, I mean, I will respond to a few of the things. The Wilshire Boulevard issue, and I think the most important thing when you're discussing this is that I've seen this many times in cities, is you have a city representative and someone from the restaurants and maybe someone from the food trucks. But who's going to represent the consumer? The reason why the food trucks ended up on Wilshire Boulevard is there were three really bad restaurants there. And there were 10,000 people across the street. It was completely underserved. We did a survey down there. We asked people before the food trucks came, did you eat at the restaurants? They said yes. We ate at the restaurants once or twice a week, some of them. And many times we jumped in our car and we drove somewhere else. Now that the food truck's here, we don't jump in our car and go somewhere else, and we don't pack lunches anymore. So they were participating in the economy. In 1979, there was a case, it was a la carte catering versus a la carte catering. And it was that was the distance from restaurant restriction. It was 100 feet. And in 1979, the appellate court said that distance restriction from a restaurant was a naked restraint of trade and therefore unconstitutional. So that they stopped enforcing that in 1979. There was some accidental enforcement in 1996, a little bit of enforcement that was knocked off in the 2000s. But the state of California has been very clear on that, that anti-competitive regulations don't fit within the confines of our Constitution. Public benefit does. So, but, you know, in every instance, the times when you say that a restaurant somehow deserves the consumer, you know, deserves to have the consumer, you know, the consumer gets upset about it. And that's what happened in Los Angeles. That Wilshire Boulevard thing blew up, and there were some really, really upset consumers, and they called the councilman, and they really let their voice be heard. They wanted their ability to have choice. So I'll give you just a quick example. Down in West Los Angeles, Olympic Boulevard, Hulu, which is, if you guys know Hulu, it's, you can watch TV shows on your computer through Hulu. They were located in West Los Angeles. They started inviting trucks because they only had one restaurant that was very expensive. The trucks did pretty well. Then there was 4 trucks, and it was 5 trucks. The restaurant complained. The city was going to ban them, and then we discussed it. It didn't work out. There was a lot of back and forth. It lasted a year. And what happened? The restaurant changed its menu. They started having a rotating menu that people could grab and go back to their office. The 5 trucks turned into 4 trucks, 3 trucks, 2 trucks. They couldn't compete with the restaurant that decided that they were going to service their customers the way that the customers wanted to be served. They couldn't. But the whole ordeal was so frustrating to Hulu because all they wanted was to serve their customers that they ended up taking their billion-dollar business, and they're worth $1 billion, to Santa Monica, to a street that had food trucks that, you know, were not restricted. The consumer is a huge motivator and a huge factor in this. And consumers will, you know, ultimately pick where they want to eat.
Okay, well, thank you for your presentation. Unless there's any other questions.
I think each city at CBAG will continue to make decisions that work best for their city. Cathedral City is excited about this opportunity for small businesses to come in. We are working with a local business on the potential of a commissary, and hopefully that will be able to get legs and we'll have more control over it. Obviously, it's incumbent upon every city to make sure that rules and regulations are in place that work best for them. But I think this is a great opportunity to have something new, unique, and different here in the Coachella Valley. We don't have high-rise office buildings for thousands of people, so we are not going to be having the food trucks that you see in Los Angeles pulling up to these work sites or in New York, as you see all the time. I think the model out here will be very, very different, and I think time will tell exactly what that model will look like. And again, each city will set aside for themselves what they want to see in their city. Thank you.
Thanks,
Mr. Chairman. Can we just ask for the citation on that case one more time, please?
The People versus a la carte Catering, 1979. And if you like, I can send you the actual citation.
Unless there's any others, this is an informational item, and we will, each one of us in various cities, address the issue. Take it away. Thank you, John, for
the support. I would just say one more time, this is the county health ordinance. We just situated this now where we can say these are going to be safe. It's up to the cities to follow up if they wish to do so. And we will get the model ordinances and make sure that each city receives a copy of those.
Good. Okay. Thank you, John. All right. We'll move to item number B, and that's a recommendation and update from Public Safety Committee, the DUI Ad Hoc Task Force. Aurora? I'm going to go to the next one.
Committee's recommendation, Coachella Mayor Garcia presented to the Public Safety Committee and relayed the tragic death of 25-year-old Coachella resident Selena Nava, who was hit and killed by a drunk driver. Following discussion on how to prevent further needless tragedies and to address DUI, the committee took action to assemble an ad hoc task force to look at how to regionally address driving under the influence issues in the Coachella Valley. The task force was selected by the Public Safety Committee and is comprised of Mayor Garcia, who was selected as chair. It's also comprised of Mayor Mertens from Indian Wells, Mayor Pro Tem Vasquez from Cathedral City, Chief Twist from Indio PD, Chief France from Palm Springs PD, Chief Vest from the Palm Desert Sheriff Station, Captain Shouse from La Quinta and Coachella Sheriff Stations, Sean Lafferty, Assistant DA, and Dale Grobo, who is attorney at law. The first task force meeting was held on December 9th. The group size will be kept to a minimum, as there is a much broader effort with the Clinton Health Matters Initiative that is also addressing this issue. Indio Police Chief Twist talked about a successful enforcement and outreach program their city had. They had in place as a result of a $50,000 grant from the state ABC department. The task force recommends that it pursue a grant application through the state ABC for a regional effort similar to Indio's. However, because of the specific grant's eligibility requirements, CVAG cannot apply, but it looks like the DA will. And they did confirm that. Unfortunately, they confirmed it after the executive committee agenda went out. The task force also discussed an ordinance that the city of Indian Wells adopted this past November, which established a DUI vehicle impound cost recovery fee. The cost for a regular vehicle impound is $150. For a vehicle impound involving DUI, the cost increases due to the extra work to $670 per vehicle. As this would serve as a financial deterrent, the task force recommends that a model ordinance replicating Indian Wells' ordinance be developed for consideration and adoption by the jurisdictions. You have that blue sheet in front of you, which has the new recommendations. Because CVAG is not the lead applicant, you do not need to do a resolution, and so that first recommendation of the four was changed. We also did a minor change in the second recommendation. And now I'd like to ask if Mayor Garcia and Mayor Williams would like to make any additional comments.
Thank you, Aurora. Well, first and foremost, thank the Executive Committee for allowing the Public Safety Committee to take on this issue. And although it was mentioned there are some recommendations related to additional or enhanced enforcement, we at the ad hoc committee have also decided to go after this grant where there will be a significant amount of education information efforts going on with the recommendation of integrating our youth into that process. And so the Indio Police Chief has been very supportive and will be reaching out to many of the youth in the city of Indio, which will serve as a template for all of our other cities to incorporate our youth component into this ABC grant that will allow for an education information campaign about really the impacts of driving under the influence or driving impaired. And so I just wanted to thank this committee for allowing us to take on this issue at the Public Safety Committee level and those who are participating in this process as well. Mr. Mertens, would you like to add anything to that?
Not too much to add, Mayor, but I would say that from my background that we do a pretty good job of enforcement throughout the valley. The local police departments and the sheriff's department do a great job with their checkpoints and DUI enforcement. What's really lacking, and has been lacking for a number of years, is the education component. And that's what we're driving at with this particular grant. The ABC, we've talked with them. They're pretty excited about it. We're hoping that eventually CVAC would be able to be a proponent. But in this particular case, we had to go with finding a law enforcement agency to be a proponent, although I think the ABC is going to be looking very closely at how this works if we're successful in getting the grant. And there are a number of other grant applications that are available, too. So working through the Clinton Foundation and Mothers Against Drunk Driving and several other organizations, we are seeking out further grant opportunities that I hope that we have the support of this executive committee to pursue with the Public Safety Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions of staff? No comments? There are four parts to this motion, and that I'd like to do it all in one motion. So I will entertain a motion if there's no comments. So, Jeff?
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, I want to applaud CBAG for trying to take control over this issue that has caused significant morbidity and mortality in all of our jurisdictions. I'm sure we all can point to a very heinous case. I can certainly point to one in Temecula where a friend of mine was a dentist, had two sons, and each of his sons in separate instances were killed by somebody driving under the influence of alcohol. He lost both of his sons. And while I was a Temecula City Council member, I didn't want to see that type of heinous loss of life happen again. And so I brought forward to the council a program called Operation Erase It, which stood for Enforce Responsible Alcohol Consumption in Temecula. And the city applied for a trailer, which we got through federal funds, where we parked a trailer and we had mandatory checkpoints at least once or twice a month. And the first time we set that up, we picked up about 20 people that were intoxicated above the legal limit of 0.08%. So that's certainly something that cities can do. The county can't do it because we can't do traffic enforcement with the sheriff's department. The highway patrol does that function for us. But I mentioned that to the cities. If you can find in your budget, if you have a traffic squad, set up a checkpoint, you know, once a month if you can in random locations. And you'll be surprised that the word gets out that people are going to be aware that you've got this program. As a part of our program, we also had decoys. We used reserve officers that or volunteers, explorers, going into alcohol-selling establishments to make sure that they weren't selling alcohol to minors. And at the time that I was on the Temecula City Council, we actually worked out an agreement with then-District Attorney Grover Trask. And we said, we want you to make this a three strikes and you're out against the retailer. The first time, you get your a fine. The second time, you get suspension. And the third time, revocation of your alcohol-selling permit. And our incidence of driving under the influence decreased significantly. And then lastly, one thing that I've been working on with the judges in Riverside County is that anyone that is convicted, if you will, of driving under the influence, that they be required to wear what's called a scram anklet as a part of their probation, if you will. And what it does is it's an anklet they wear that will detect alcohol, and they have to promise the court that they are not going to be drinking alcohol for a certain period of time. Otherwise, they go back into jail. And one last thing, you want to talk about being punitive. In the County of Riverside, we passed another program called Recourse, required every convict reimburse county expenses, which includes the booking fee. And that is that we will charge any convict that gets into our county jails that has the capacity to pay, which is about 25% of those convicted. They have to reimburse the county $142 a day for each jail stay, and the $500 booking fee, roughly, is $475. It gets returned to the county if they're booked in the county, and it gets returned to the city if they get picked up in the cities. So I throw that out there as an elected official for almost 21 years. This has been an issue that has been very troubling to me, and there are ways in which we can all work together to reduce the loss of innocent life.
Thank you, Jeff. As stated, there's four parts to this motion. I'd like to do it all in one motion, and unless there's any other questions, I'll entertain a motion.
Move the recommendation.
Second. Moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Seeing none, please note that the motion passed unanimously.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Next item is authorization to set aside Transportation Development Act State Transit Assistance Funds for the Coachella Valley Rail Program. Alan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The CBAG staff recommendation today is to approve implementation of the authority granted by the MOU, which was approved between RCTC and CBAG for meeting in September 2013. The MOU provided the authority, or allowed the authority, to provide direction for the Riverside County Transportation Commission to set aside Transportation Development Act State Transit Assistance Funds in the amount of 5% in fiscal year 2014-15,
7% in fiscal year 2015-16, 10% in fiscal year 2016-17, and 10% every fiscal year thereafter for the Coachella Valley Rail program. As a recommendation tonight, that recommendation was approved by your Transportation Committee and your Technical Advisory Committee. Attached to the staff report, you have the staff report of the Riverside County Transportation Commission, whereby they approved the MOU. And also attached to that is the MOU itself, which you guys prepared and was approved by you in September of last year. If I have any further questions.
Good. Thanks, Alan. Questions of staff? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion.
Yeah, I would have Mr. Pettis, if he would like to comment. I mean, this is the guy who's driven this train. And I think it's an important moment, and I want to recite the efforts that you've made, and I think it's appropriate.
Thank you, Supervisor. Actually, the train's going far too slow for my taste, but should the Executive Committee approve this tonight, this is a major step forward for passenger rail here in Coachella Valley. It will actually get us real dollars for training purposes, as well as to advocate with our representatives from Washington and Sacramento to make this happen. And we certainly can't forget all the work that Bob Manning has been doing to make this happen as well, as a volunteer and working out there in the community. This is an excellent program for the Coachella Valley, and a great step forward.
And I would move through.
Second.
Moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Seeing none, please note that the motion passed unanimously. Okay, we'll move on to the next item, and that's consider amendment number one to the agreement with the City of Palm Springs to provide additional funds to supplement federal grant funds for the Vista Chino Drive Bridge Project. Alan.
In September 2011, CVAC entered a reimbursement agreement with the City of Palm Springs to undertake the preliminary engineering phase of a project to construct a bridge on Vista Chino Drive over the Whitewater River Channel. At that time, the total estimated cost of the project was $1 million. The City of Palm Springs has now completed the preliminary engineering phase of work on the bridge project, which includes work up to the environmental document and project approval. The estimated total cost of the preliminary engineering phase of the work has now been revised to $1,690,000. The City of Palm Springs has acquired a Highway Bridge Program grant to fund the majority of the cost of this work. The HPP grant provides 88.53% of the cost of the project, leaving the remaining 11.47% of project costs as the local share. The City of Palm Springs is now requesting approval of Amendment Number 1 to the agreement to provide payment of 75% of this increased local share of project costs, an additional amount of $59,358. The reimbursement agreement approved in September 2011 authorized CVAG funds in the not to exceed amount of $86,025. The amended total CVAG regional share will now be $145,383. The recommendation tonight is that you approve Amendment Number 1 of the agreement with the City of Palm Springs to provide additional regional funds in the amount not to exceed $59,358 at 75% of the local share of additional costs to supplement federal grant funds for the Vista Chino Drive Bridge Project. The amended total of CVAG's regional share of project costs will be $145,383. Both the Transportation Committee and Technical Advisory Committee concur with this recommendation. Questions?
Okay. Questions of staff? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Staff recommendation.
Second. Moved and second. Please vote. Everybody, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Motion passes. Please let me know that the motion was passed unanimously. Okay. Move on to the next item, and that's agreement with the City of Palm Springs to provide funds to supplement Highway Bridge Program grant funds for environmental approval and final design of the South Palm Canyon Drive Bridge over Taquas Creek Channel Bridge Replacement Project. Alan.
You pretty much summed it up. The City of Palm Springs has successfully acquired a Highway Bridge Program grant for environmental approval and final design to construct the South Palm Canyon Drive Bridge over Taquas Creek Bridge Replacement Project. The total estimated cost of the environmental approval and final design phase and the bridge rehabilitation project is $889,000. The HPP grant provides 88.53% of that amount, being $787,032. Peter, the remaining cost is the local share being $101,968. The City of Palm Springs is requesting the CBAG pay 75% of the local share in the amount of $76,476. Your recommendation tonight is that you approve an agreement with the City of Palm Springs to provide 75% of the local share of costs for environmental approval and final design for our Highway Bridge Program grant for the South Palm Canyon Drive Bridge over Tapas Creek Channel Bridge Replacement Project in the amount of $76,476. That's the CBAG regional share of project costs, pending availability of funds and time of payment. Both your Transportation Committee and Technical Advisory Committees concur with this recommendation.
Thanks, Al. Questions of staff? Again, seeing none, I will entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Please let it be known. All right, we'll move on to the next item, and that's agreement with the City of Palm Springs to provide funds to supplement Highway Bridge Program grant funds for environmental approval and final design for the East Palm Canyon Drive Bridge over Palm Canyon Wash Bridge Rehabilitation Project. Alan.
This is identical to the last staff report, except that the total estimated cost of the environmental approval and final design phase is $890,000. The HPP grant will pay $787,917, giving a local share of $102,083. The City of Palm Springs is requesting the CDI pay 75% of the local share, which amount of $76,563. The recommendation tonight is that the Executive Committee approve an agreement with the City of Palm Springs to provide 75% of the local share of costs for environmental improvement and final design for a Highway Bridge Program grant for the East Palm Canyon Drive Bridge over Palm Canyon Wash Bridge Rehabilitation Project. Any amount of $76,563 as the CDOT regional share of project costs being available at the time of payment. Both the Transportation Committee and Technical Advisory Committee have approved this contract.
Move approval.
Second. There's been a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion, anybody opposed? Seeing none, let it be known that the motion passed unanimously.
Okay.
Move on to the last item of this evening, and that's a transportation uniform mitigation fee pump for the year 12-13 annual and 5-year report. Jim Sullivan, but Tom, do you want to add at this point?
Just very briefly, particularly for those of you that are relatively new to the CVAG process and the organization, Tom is a first-of-its-kind program in this nation. It's been now around for over 2 decades, and we've got a couple of programs in the nation that have emulated it, but this was a cutting-edge program. It is paired with Measure A sales tax dollars to get things done in the Coachella Valley in terms of transportation infrastructure. And I asked Jim, while this could have certainly been a consent calendar item, I asked Jim to give us a quick update. And also, it's a good indicator of the health of the regional development economy, which certainly is better than it was a year or 2 years ago, but not quite as good as it has been over the last couple decades. Jim?
Thank you. Our report is done in fulfillment of the Mitigation Fee Act annual reports. You see those all the time in your cities. If you go to the website with the report, we cover all that kind of stuff. We're trying to do a little bit more of a background on this, an overview, instead of just going through all the numbers. As Tom said, this is a very innovative transportation funding in conjunction with the half-cent sales tax in Measure A. First in the country, as he said, these are very common now, very uncommon, well, first in the country in 1989. The CVAC receives a portion of Measure A sales tax for regional arterial projects, and jurisdictions collect a development fee, and they get a proportion of Measure A for local streets. You're not forced to participate in TUMF if you do not collect TUMF. However, you do not get your local city streets, and that money instead comes to CVAG. It's referred to as the in-lieu TUMF. One of the nice things is now everybody's in. There has been cities that have been out at various times in the past. Right now, everybody's in. We can't begin collecting in 2013. There are two categories that we were looking at. This is TUMF, which is a measure of development, and you know the story. 2006, 2007, the collapse of development and the economy, and you can see it went down, and I think fiscal year 11-12 is probably going to bear a low point when only 1.1 million was collected. Last year, that slightly over doubled to 2.1 million, so development is picking up, and actually our latest stuff that I've seen from TUMF, this year we are going to be up significantly over the 2 million if we keep going the way we have. This is the in-lieu, which is a measure of sales tax. So you can see, as you know, sales tax is much more stable than development fees. So overall, that's what we've ended up with, and you can see that, again, the big drop that you've seen with development, and we do appear to be coming back, but of course we're coming back from sort of flat on our backs to sitting up a little bit, but that's still better than flat on your back. So just since the inception, the amount of money that's come in to our transportation programs, this year we got $3.4 million in TUMF and Measure A, in lieu, I should say, which is the La Quinta money. Since the inception, $121 million has been collected for our regional programs from this TUMF and the in-lieu from the various cities that weren't participating one way or another. This year from the sales tax, we got $17.6 million. Since inception in 1989, $237 million has come to our transportation program. And when I was listening to Chair Adolph say, we don't want this to be like L.A., we have started to make it not like L.A. in 1989 by making sure our transportation system worked. So the total this year was $21.1 million. Total since we began in 1989, $358 million has come into CVAG for regional road programs. And an additional $175 million gone to the cities and the county for local streets. And our TUMF is by far lower than our neighbors. A single family home is $1,837 in the Coachella Valley in Western Riverside. It's $8,873. San Bernardino doesn't have a regional fee, but the average of all the cities collecting a transportation fee in the county of San Bernardino is $46.46. So we are quite a low fee, and one of the reasons that you can do a little bit less if you wait. Some of the other places in California have fees of $35,000, $50,000 a house. When you wait long enough, you get to pay to buy all the houses alongside the road when you want to widen it. So any questions, I'd be happy to try to ask you.
Questions of Jim?
Okay.
There is no questions. I'll entertain a motion. Moved and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Let it be known that the motion passed unanimously. That concludes the agenda for today. The announcements of the next executive committee is for February 24th, Monday at 4:30. At this point, we are adjourned.